This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about 50 years of wireless communication. Cell phones connect through radio frequency radiation, both the phones and the towers emit this radiation. Since the early days of wireless communication, some people have been worried about potential health risks, cancer, terrible headaches, or even behavior changes. There were lawsuits, arguments, and a lot of seemingly inconclusive studies. Now, with 5G, the much faster and more powerful fifth-generation mobile network, and the many cell sites it requires, those discussions are heating up again. And a recent major court decision could lead to new safety requirements around this type of radiation. Grant Hill has more.
Maura Hahn and Mark Hotchkiss live in a small grayish ranch house in Long Beach, California. It could easily be mistaken for others in the neighborhood if it weren't for the front yard. Maura is an artist, and the yard seems somehow fitting. It's lush, filled with bushes and palms and a giant Australian pine tree. There's also this big metal pole, a streetlight, right on the sidewalk outside of the yard.
If you turn around, that's the light post.
It's been there since Mark and Maura moved in over 20 years ago, something they never really thought much about until they received a letter in 2021 from a company they had never heard of. It looked like junk mail, so it sat on the kitchen table for a couple of days, unopened.
And then when Mark opened it, he goes, "Why didn't you open this?" I'm like, "It was just addressed to you, not both of us." And he goes, "Well, you should read it." So I read it, and it's like, holy mackerel, really?
It was a notice informing them that the pole outside, that big lamppost, would soon be equipped with a wireless transmission facility, a WTF for short. All part of AT&T's big 5G rollout in Long Beach.
And it said, oh, by the way, there's a sign on the lamppost.
Maura went out to the curb to check, and...
And yeah, sure enough.
There was a sign, a simple flyer, facing outward toward the street. Since the 5G network was introduced nearly 4 years ago, more than 30 states have enacted legislation that makes it easier to install 5G cell sites like the one proposed for the pole in front of Maura's home. Mobile markets research analyst Jason Lee says the push boils down to three words: Internet of Things.
So you're going to be able to connect more devices, more sensors, you know, upwards of a million connections in a, you know, square mile, far and away what you can currently. So the interesting mix of those three.
Jason says the 5G network is not as much about cell phone connection as it is about the connection of almost everything else. Your car, your sprinklers, your toaster, allowing all of those things to be connected and accessible, controlled or programmed from anywhere. 5G is fast and powerful. It's the network needed to make all of this possible.
The networks themselves are, you know, the first foundational piece. And really what everybody's trying to figure out is, now what do we do with this?
It opens up the possibility of constant information and control. Just take Long Beach, for example, home to Maura and Mark, but also the second largest container port in North America, a crucial node in the global supply chain. More than 2,000 ships come through there a year, and on board many of them, sensors that capture highly detailed, real-time information about weather conditions and traffic at sea. Information that allows these ships to find faster routes and become more efficient. With the help of 5G, the hope is to one day use that data to control entire fleets of unmanned ships from the shore. There's a lot of money at stake to see it through. Future business models. Which brings us back to that lamppost outside of Maura and Mark's house. Now a proposed 5G cell site. They had 10 days to file an appeal with the city, and the clock was ticking. Mark wasn't that worried about it at first.
When we got the notice, it didn't bother me.
Mark is an electrical engineer who once hardwired their entire house for internet access before making the switch to Wi-Fi. So at first, he didn't mind this technical upgrade right outside.
But Maura was worried about what are the health effects of this.
Maura, on the other hand, had long suffered from serious migraines, so much so that she had to retire from her job teaching art at a nearby college. In the days after they received the notice, Maura decided to consult her doctor about her migraines again. And during that consultation, he said something kind of strange. He suggested that her migraines could be related to something called electromagnetic hypersensitivity, or EHS.
What about Wi-Fi? You know, that could cause it. Trying to get rid of all your cellular stuff. Get rid of the walk-around phones.
EHS is a little-known, under-researched, and controversial health condition, where people experience reactions to certain types of electromagnetic radiation, especially the kind that's emitted by cell phone towers, or Wi-Fi. Maura looked it up online.
There were quite a number of articles that said it's not real, or it's psychological, or these people experience symptoms but could be from something else.
So Maura and Mark decided to run a test of their own. They returned to Mark's old hardwired system in the house, went back to using a landline phone, no more wireless internet or devices. And within a matter of hours, Maura says her symptoms nearly disappeared. But now, this proposed 5G cell site, just about 25 feet from the window where she paints, it seemed to threaten her future well-being. Mark and Maura decided to file an appeal against the cell site. Maura's doctor even wrote a letter and explained her sensitivity to cell phone radiation, which was included in their appeal. Maura knew how all this looked, by the way, the convenient timing of her diagnosis, but she didn't care.
Hit the nail on the head there. I didn't care what people thought. I knew what I had experienced.
They found an attorney and delivered their appeal just in the nick of time.
And that's when it all started.
A city employee told Maura not to get her hopes up. The way the city code was written, almost no one beats these things. As Maura prepped for her appeal, she kept researching.
Tracking down experts, asking questions.
And she quickly discovered that the politics of cell phones, towers, and street poles extended way beyond city limits. And decades into the past.
President of the United States, Bill Clinton.
It all started with the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996, when Congress sought to create a seamless network of cellular communications from sea to shining sea. That meant while cities and towns could have a say in cell tower construction, they couldn't flat out refuse to build them.
This law is truly revolutionary legislation that will bring the future to our doorstep.
But turns out, many communities didn't want the future, at least not right at their doorstep. By the end of the 1990s, more than 600 towns across the country had placed moratoriums on building new towers, often citing fear of the unknown potential for long-term health effects of living near such cell sites.
Because they are too dangerous.
Back then, the New York Times described these efforts as guerrilla war, a losing one. As wireless communication exploded, the number of towers grew and grew. Now, it's four times higher than it was in 2000. And while activists continued the fight, arguing that we simply didn't know enough about the health risks, industry reassured the public that there was nothing to worry about, that federal guidelines, limits on exposure to radiation coming from these towers, protected people from harm.
In 1996 was when the FCC propagated those limits, the guidelines that are still in force today.
That's Theodora Scarrato, Executive Director of Environmental Health Trust, a think tank that's been fighting the Federal Communications Commission over these health concerns for years. The FCC is not a health agency. Nonetheless, it's in charge of setting limits for cell phone radiation exposure, a determined safety threshold that's currently based on studies done by the Navy in the 80s.
The studies that are put forward as the ones that underpin how they came up with the level of what is safe and what is not are these small animal studies.
Very small. 5 monkeys and 8 rats, to be exact. Scientists saw behavioral changes when the animals were exposed to high levels of radio frequency radiation, levels intense enough to heat their tissue, much like a microwave heats food. So in 1996, when the FCC created our current guidelines for cell phone radiation exposure, it focused singularly on preventing these thermal effects in people. But, of course, this was 1996, before cell phones had become ubiquitous. So in 2013, the FCC promised to reevaluate those guidelines, and the agency invited public comment.
And they asked, should we change these limits? Are these limits adequate?
This process went on for years, as people like Theodora submitted evidence and studies that seemed to show that cell phone radiation well within the current limits could cause all kinds of health issues.
You know, headaches and cancer and oxidative stress impacts to sperm and so forth.
Among the work submitted was a 2018 study on cell phone radiation and cancer. Researchers with the National Toxicology Program were tasked by the FDA to create the largest animal study on radio frequency radiation ever, 90 rats and mice. It took 10 years and cost $30 million. When it was done, the researchers said they found, quote, clear evidence of an association between cell phone radiation and heart cancer in rats. They also found some evidence of a link to brain cancer and changes to DNA. But Theodora and researchers involved in the study say it all fell on deaf ears. Ultimately, the FCC decided not to change the guidelines and did not fully explain their reasoning.
They just ignored so much of what we had put on the record, and it seemed pretty clear that we could sue at that point related to their lack of adequate review of the record. So we did.
Theodora's group and others took the FCC to court to basically force them to explain why they had decided to keep the safety guidelines untouched. This was in 2019.
Case number 20-1025 et al. Environmental Health Trust et al.
And remarkably, Theodore's group and fellow petitioners, they won.
The U.S. Court of Appeals, D.C. Circuit, determined that the FCC had acted in an arbitrary and capricious manner in their decision to maintain the limits.
The court mandated the FCC to go back and reevaluate its guidelines based on the research submitted. And since then, it's unclear what has happened. The agency did not respond to my questions about the status of that process. To be fair, plenty of people and researchers maintain that the current exposure levels are safe, that the current guidelines are fine. I spoke to global experts who review this kind of evidence who told me that there is no reason for concern here, that the studies that were presented in this court case were not conclusive. But people like Theodora see the court decision as a huge victory because it now provides ammo for people who are fighting towers and cell sites at the local level. People like Maura Hahn and Mark Hotchkiss.
You hear me okay?
Well, we can hear you, Larry.
By March of 2022, their neighbors in Long Beach had rallied around their cause, flooding the city with comments against the cell site proposed by AT&T.
For those who are wishing to give public comment, I caution you, I don't...
Nearly 50 people tuned in to a virtual hearing for their appeal, including Theodora Scarrato.
Executive Director of who now?
Environmental Health Trust.
Theodora was there to speak in support of Maura's health concerns, but also to talk about how her group's work related to the whole situation in Long Beach, explain their big win against the FCC in court. The city's attorney,
it's legally irrelevant.
He didn't really care. Sure, the FCC had to review its rules, but for now, the current ones were still in effect.
We just follow the FCC's rules. We understand what the D.C. Circuit case meant for the FCC's need to change those rules going forward, but they haven't changed yet.
Technically, the decision had no bearing on whether Long Beach should take action against the cell site.
I don't want anybody on this call to think that we are skeptics about the effect of RF emissions. It's just irrelevant.
Eventually, there was a motion to vote on whether to deny the appeal. It was a tie, 4-4. The potential cell site now hung in legal limbo, both sides unclear how to proceed. But Mora's lawyer, Doug Karstens, was confident AT&T wouldn't go down without a fight. That all of this was much bigger than this one 5G site on a lamppost. That it was a matter of ceding ground.
They don't want to set the precedent of moving it to accommodate one person, because now they're going to have to, they think, you know, move it to accommodate everybody else.
The company feared a domino effect, Doug thought. And since the hearing, others in Long Beach had come forward against cell sites near their homes. Both parties agreed to a temporary hold on a final decision regarding the streetlight. As they waited for the fog to clear, Mora and Mark prepared for the worst. Mora was so worried about the potential health effects, her migraines coming back, that they were getting ready to move. Then, the day came when the hold was to be lifted, March 1st of this year. No word on a final decision. Another week passed. Still nothing. Eventually, I reached out to speak with someone from AT&T about Mora and Mark's situation. The company didn't make anyone available, but a representative did give me some news. Quote, due to various reasons, AT&T is no longer planning to build a small cell site at that location. Mark and Mora's tactics seem to have worked.
Hey, Grant.
I called them to give them the news and get their reaction. It was more subdued than I had expected.
Until the city and or AT&T reaches out to our attorney, we're just cautiously optimistic.
Very cautiously.
We're taking it with a grain of salt, knowing that it was a PR person talking to a reporter from where we heard it, so nothing's official.
Right, our attorney hasn't.
Finally, a few days later, Mark and Moore's attorney, Doug, reached out to Long Beach officials, asking if what I had heard from AT&T was true. The city confirmed it. The battle was over. Mark and Mora's big metal pole out front would remain just a big metal pole, a streetlight. And the all but inevitable future trespassing at their doorstep successfully shoot from their front yard.
That story was reported by Grant Hill.